You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, October 28th, 2009. This is episode 103, Games with a Purpose. It is time again to talk about technology. This is the Wells Tech Podcast. My name is Martin Spriggs, and I am joined by two lovely ladies, as usual, on our Classroom Technology. Well, it's not Classroom Technology Tuesday, and we release the show on Wednesday. We're actually recording on Monday today, so we'll just have to make do. We're talking about classroom technology, and joining me is Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. And for a Monday, I'm a little bit confused by all that. We'll go with it.
I'll try and keep it simple from here on out, all right?
Okay.
And also joining us is Gail Potratz. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, everyone.
How are you?
I'm just great, ready to go on this Monday.
All right. And we're going to talk about some exciting stuff as it relates to education and gaming. Seems to be a growing trend in trying to find these games that serve a couple purposes, that engage the student but also teach them something. So let's talk a little bit about the increase in popularity in these things and maybe even the sophistication.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that gaming in education has gotten extremely more popular and more sophisticated. my favorite recollection of gaming in our household was when my daughter got to the princess at the end of the Mario game first before anyone else and took a picture of it to prove to my son, who was younger and in bed by that time, that she actually conquered
it.
And when you think about those games, and that's where my family really came into it, is in those days with Mario and Luigi. Mm-hmm. And Clark Quinn is perhaps one of the top educational gaming writers of today, and he writes a book called Principles of Engagement, as it has to do with gaming and creating games. And what he emphasizes some very important points, but I just wanted to highlight a couple of them, because there are a lot of games out there, some good and not good in the educational sense. Some are successful in teaching things and engaging kids, and some are not. And I think the one thing I've learned from him the most is, if you want to have a successful educational game, he calls the principle action domain. And what that means is, kids, while they're playing a game, they should be making decisions in the course of the story or in course of the process of the game. Now, a bad example of that would be, according to Quinn, when you answer a math question or problem correctly, so then you get to play a game. That wouldn't be a good action domain. What would be a good one would be is when the game is actually the simulation, not the reward.
Gotcha. Okay.
So
it's integrated.
It's a huge difference in the way we think about games. Okay. And of course, action, constant action is good. And if you look at the video games that you think of, there is always constant action and feedback on the action. Kids make a decision. You know, in Mario, there was always a choice of which path to take, you know, which way to get there. And then there was a direct consequence or some feedback on that. And to pattern that and create an educational game, the feedback that kids get on their answer or response is critical in the engagement of the student in the game. So a lot of principles when people are engineering these games, or when teachers are creating these really on their own simpler versions of this, some good principles to keep in mind if you want to really keep kids engaged in a game. So I think we can learn a lot from him.
You know, my circumstance here in Sleepy Eyes, I get the privilege of volunteering in our Lutheran Day School. A couple of afternoons a week, I work with the students in a computer lab setting. So we probably aren't as integrated as we should be with the classroom, although they do technology projects and use smart boards with the classroom instruction as well. But the set aside time each week, we do some typing practice. That's one of the main goals that I have with them, is to work on their typing skills. But then I really get the opportunity to just explore different things with them, expose them to different technology trends or websites or whatever that I find that I think would be engaging to them. And the whole realm of gaming is where they want to be, you know, when they have that extra little 15 minutes of carved out time. They want to do something that's engaging their brain, in some kind of game fashion. And so finding these educational games that they really enjoy, but yet, as a side note, they're learning something along the way, is really, really where my kids want to be, at least.
Right. You know, kids, that's why this whole thing in education and gaming came about, because we got to a point in education that we noticed that kids can play a video game for 5 hours and not have their attention diverted. But they cannot do that when you're trying to speak to them in class for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, five-hour social studies class is not a winner.
Right. So, you know, to find ways to use our technology and our ways to build creative learning situations that, you know, pattern games but teach them the content that we're interested in them learning is really a neat idea.
The evolution I've seen in games, and we're going to talk about online games for the most part here coming up, but back in the day when they were CD or DVD based, there was an evolution where the novelty of the game was the fact that, boy, it was on the computer and you could click something and something would happen. We're way beyond that at this point, and I think that has probably been an enabler for educational content and real engaged learners, kind of engrossing themselves in the game, whether it be kind of a more role playing game or whether it's more research oriented or whatever. I think the novelty is gone, which is good, but then you really get into some games where you can really focus on educational content. And it's probably a trick or a balance between, the fun, the engaging nature of a game and then the educational content as well. And good games make that more seamless, right?
Right. And good games do that. And the other thing is kids getting involved in the actual creation of the games.
Right,
now.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of programs out there to do that. And there's actually a whole school that just opened this fall. Their umbrella name is the Institute of Play, and instituteofplay.com. And if you go there, you will find out that they claim that they teach what they call gaming literacies. So they've gotten to the literacy kind of a buzzword, I guess you'd say, in education. And they list risk-taking, critical reflection, collaboration, meaning creation, nonlinear navigation, problem-solving, mm-hmm. and problem definition, and innovation. And the kids that go to this school, I've looked really hard to find out actually what content they do teach, and I can't really find that on their website. But whatever they do teach, they teach it all in the context of gaming, not necessarily all online or all video games, mm-hmm. even board games, mm-hmm. but the idea of the game itself. And it's quite fascinating. Their school is grade 6 through 12, just opened. It's in New York. It's called Quest to Learn, and I'm going to follow that.
I bet we see more of that. I got to think that's coming. Now, the genesis for this whole conversation, Sally and I were talking before we kind of went further down this road, is, a safe place on the Internet, right, Sally?
That's right, and it actually is kind of an offshoot of trying to develop this safe place that mm-hmm. we began to realize the fruits of this were the educational implications.
Right.
So for me personally, as I tried to find appropriate things for my computer lab students to do in the time that I had with them each week, I began developing a list and tried to direct them to appropriate items so that it wasn't just haphazard, you know, okay, let's go on the web and see what we can find for you guys to do kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I developed a list and I named it my Wacky Wonderful Websites. And I carved out an area on our school website for this and began posting links. And as I exposed the students to different cool stuff, they would go home and actually surf these sites from home. And the parents began commenting. I got, you know, the whole feedback loop going there that they were excited that the kids had a safe place to go and that, you know, I had pre-screened sites for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a Lutheran elementary school, that certainly is an appropriate thing for us to be doing to provide, you know, some safe surfing because these kids want to be online and there's plenty to engage them, you know, not just for entertainment purposes, as mm-hmm. we're discussing, but to engage them in ways that they're learning along the way as well. So
right.
Having our Wacky Wonderful Websites, it's really grown over the last 3 years to be doing this, and it's been a real valuable resource during school and for their away from school hours as well.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So what we're going to do and what you, Sally, and Gail have done is we've categorized some good games into three age groups, pre-K to 2, or essentially non-readers, 3rd grade to 5th grade, and 6th to 8th grade. So we're sticking primarily in the elementary school age groups. High school is, I guess, a whole different ball game, and maybe we could talk about that at some other show. But we're going to put all these in the show notes, so you don't have to madly scribble these down, of course. But we're going to go through and pick a couple from each category, explain a little bit about their, you know, what they are, and maybe what their use is, and then get some kind of sense for what is out there and what kind of things can be accomplished through games. So, should we start with the pre-K to grade 2 section? Who'd like to go first?
I'll jump in there.
Okay.
This was my most challenging group as I began working with the students at our school because they are non-readers. So
right.
if you say, go here and click here, it has to be a visual graphic thing or they just don't get it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there are just loads of great resources in this age category. Everything from PBS Kids resources. There's even typing things that can get the little ones started finding the keys on the keyboard. The one I wanted to highlight was a site called This is Daniel Cook. And Daniel Cook apparently is a TV show, or that title, This is Daniel Cook, is a TV show in Canada. And they have an awesome website just loaded with learning activities, very interactive. The kids can build things, can take pictures of their creations and print them out, which they love to do. Just lots and lots of fun things. And actually, there's a companion TV show called This is Emily Young, and there's a whole website with Emily Young. So you kind of appeal to the boys and the girls because they can pick, you know, their mm-hmm. gender to explore the website. You can go outside and play in the backyard. The seasons change, and the activities change around that. One of their favorites is building a water slide, and they can build all kinds of loop-de-loops in the water slide and make Daniel Cook slide down the water slide. They mm-hmm. can do cooking, all kinds of stuff. And it's really, really well done. Lots of great activities there.
Maybe just a question, Sally. I'm sorry, Gail. Maybe just a question as we go through this, and as you've experienced these sites, and you probably didn't have somebody in this age group as you were discovering this site, mm-hmm. so maybe you don't have great insight, but how much are these children needing to have somebody sit beside them and walk them through this? Or if you sit them in front of a computer and in front of this website, can they get it by themselves?
It's interesting. We start with our kindergartners in this group, and maybe the first week or two, they need a little bit of direction, more like this is what your browser icon looks like. If you click on that, you know, you'll mm-hmm. be all set. But the way, and you'll see this when you look at my Wacky Wonderful websites, I built everything graphically. So even the images to get to Daniel Cook are
identifiable,
all,
and they can
exactly.
Say, yeah, click
there's
on this
no
picture.
Reading required. Right. So once they can launch Firefox, they land on our Wacky Wonderful websites as the default homepage, and they pretty much can go from there. They're pretty intuitive. Plus, they love to help each other and mm-hmm. you know, collaborate
yeah,
that
sure.
way. So. Cool. Very, very smart kids we have.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Gail, I cut you off before.
Oh, no problem. I was just going to say I hadn't seen the Daniel Cook and Emily Young before, and I was impressed because I find it hard to find good things for this age group. I've never taught this age group, but it's the age group I know the least about, mm-hmm. so it's always hard. So I'm going to keep those two in mind. I just was very simple in the one I picked. I found Hammy the hamster, your online pet. And Hammy looked like something that would be great for anybody just to fool around with once. And kindergartners probably would be enthralled for quite some time. The idea is it can, I mean, if you don't want to clean up after a classroom pet, this could be your classroom pet. and it's just a hamster in a cage. And you click on the thing and the food comes down, you feed it every day, you make sure that you have water, glug glug glug, fill up the water bottle. And the cute thing about it is when you move the mouse, this hamster, it just moves around, its eyes follow you and it looks at you and it gets up on its little feet, and it's just really cute how they've done it to make it look like it really is interacting with you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think kids would love that. So
cool.
I could see little kids using that for their classroom pet. And it does teach you some mouse skills and click skills and, you know, the things you start out with the little kids. So that's kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
I showed my kids that site last Thursday, since you had introduced me to it, and I must say that all the way through eighth grade, they all loved it. It wasn't just the kindergartners.
I know anybody would like it once.
Yeah.
Now my 15-year-old has been asking for a puppy. You think this would work on her?
It's okay. Worth a try.
It is worth a try. Believe me, it's worth a try. All right. Should we go on to grades 3 to 5?
Yeah. Lots of good stuff in this area as well. One of the main things I've mentioned is I need to teach them some typing skills, and so I'm always looking for good online typing. And the one we use with this age group is called Dance Mat Typing. It's done by the BBC, so all the audio has an English accent to it, which is kind of fun for the kids too. But very fun, interactive site, and a great place for them to get introduced to typing skills. Well done, and my kids are doing it this year with the keyboard covered. We're using boxes over the keyboard, so we've kind of notched up our typing a little bit in that regard, and they're working their way through the different levels. They can all work, you know, in different locations on the site. It doesn't have to be all done at the same time or whatever. And really good introduction to typing for grades 3 through 5.
Do you find that as the years progress, and both of you have been in the classroom for a while now, that typing skills are more and more just kind of part of the deal as kids come into school? Maybe even we were talking about the kindergartners. They have more of a clue than they ever did before, because they've got computers at home.
Well, they know a little bit more, but the thing is, if you don't teach them the way to type, the correct way to type,
you get a bunch of two-finger typers.
Yeah, and if you don't make them do it that way, they won't do it that way unless you make them. So the box cover, Sally, that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
But they say that grade 4 and 5 are where your bulk of your typing teaching should be.
Mm, okay.
And we've kind of done that in our school just by default.
Okay.
And but by the time I have them in eighth grade, we don't have time to do typing because mm-hmm. we are typing a lot all day long.
Right.
So I think that's okay. And I walk around and, you know, look, and they are using the correct form. Mm-hmm. So I think it's okay. The middle grades seem to be very good at teaching that, and the kids that practice at that level generally turn out to be pretty decent mm-hmm. typists.
I know a lot of adults who could actually go back to school on typing. There's a lot of two-finger typers I know. So
I always look at the keyboard. So as the kids are practicing their typing, I force myself to practice mm-hmm. along with them each day. But I know for a fact that here at the high school level, they've just totally pushed it down to the elementary level for the education side of it. They expect them to come into Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School with typing skills. They don't even offer the class anymore. Mm-hmm. So
makes sense.
FEL still does offer it, but there aren't a lot of people in it anymore. Right.
Gail, you're looking at something on the music side.
Yes, I'm a non-musical person. I should tell you that to begin with, and maybe this why this site enthralls me so much, because it's a really it's discovery oriented. Discovery Music is just kind of the name I gave it. What it is it's a online musical synthesizer, and it's just like a table with all tiny cells in it, and each cell is a different note. And it's patterned so that when you click in one of those little tiny squares, you hear the note sounds, and then you click a note on either side of it or up and down, and anyway, you just kind of click all over till you start discovering some patterns. Mm-hmm. So then you learn how to build a scale, and you figure out, oh, if I go this way, then I have an arpeggio going up and down, and there's a lot of neat musical concepts that could come out of that just by randomly clicking and thinking and figuring things out. And I think it's great for kids. And I just put it in 3 through 5 because, I mean, anybody could do it. I don't think it's really typically age-oriented, but mm-hmm. A real investigative type thing, I thought that was interesting.
Cool.
And I introduced this one to my kids last week as well, and I was really surprised. You know, they just think different than us, and I love to watch them working with it. It's a grid of squares, as Gail explained, and they started drawing pictures in the grid to see what the music equated to with their pictures. So and it just took off. They were all excited. My son came home and did it at home too, you know. So very cool sight.
All right, onward and upward, 6th through 8th grade.
Yeah, my pick here, and it's hard because we have a long list we're going to share, but the one that I wanted to share with everyone is a site called Fantastic Contraptions, and it allows you to, well, it sets a goal for you that you're trying to move an object into a goal zone. Basically, so maybe you have a circle on the screen and there's a big blue rectangle. You need to move that circle into the rectangle, and it gives you items to work with, things like wheels and propulsion items, maybe waterways or whatever. And the kids basically have to design a contraption that will move your object and watch the results of their design. So kind of a lesson in physics more than anything else. And they come up with some amazing contraptions. They have a lot of fun doing it, a lot of different levels to the game, and just really challenging puzzle-oriented physics site called Fantastic Contraption. They even have an iPhone application. So if you have iPod Touches in the classroom, you could do Fantastic Contraption on that as well.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to come up with just picking a site in this section because mm-hmm. there are so many. And I was going to preface this part of the 6 through 8 conversation with the fact, too. I started out today talking about basically gaming principles that involve a lot of simulations. And my bad, I didn't include any of those in the list. Any real simulations, and there are plenty of those out there. So I'm going to put a list together of those, and I'll just tweet them out there for people who are looking for some simulation-type games, because there are a lot of them. So good. after this conference week, I'll do that. But on this 6 through 8 site, the one... I guess I was going to talk about Voki, and the reason... I've talked about it before. It's a talking avatar that kids can make. And if you look up in 3 through 5, there's also the little Lego Minimizer and Doppelme. Those are basically, you can create little people that you could use as an avatar of sorts too. And I guess I won't go into those sites specifically, but I'll just mention these are good ideas for when you do things online where kids want their pictures. If you use VoiceThread and they can put their picture or their symbol around there, or anything you do online. And if you don't feel comfortable about having them use their real picture because you can't lock down the site, these are neat things to create their own little version of themselves that are a little bit safer than their actual picture. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of good to have in there. And then for my actual pick of games there, rather than the choosing the ones that are in the list that I'm looking at from my Wild Wild websites, I'm going to point to a whole list of games that we will have in the show notes. It's 35 plus educational games and resources, because this is an exhaustive list. I wouldn't want to copy them all on my website, but there's an interesting one, an Academic Skill Builders, and you can use it on a Nintendo Wii. So I thought that was the kind of the drawing point for that one there. I don't know quite how that works, but there's 21 games apparently that are math and language arts skills that can be played using a Nintendo Wii remote. So that looked very interesting. I did not check it out with a Wii or anything because mm-hmm. I don't have one. I wish mm-hmm. I did. Maybe Christmas. But and the other one...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just one quick one that is really cool that I tried out that I'm definitely going to use more is called Planet in Action. And it's got three games that are based on Google Earth. Very, very cool. One is a Moonlander where you take control of the Apollo 11 Moonlander and guide the Eagle to touch down on the moon. So that is very, very cool.
I would think Google Earth has just a huge potential in a classroom, whether it be geography or whatever, history even. There's got to be a whole ecosystem around just using Google Earth in the classroom.
Yeah, yep. Google actually has a website, Google for Educators, and they do a lot of sharing of, I can't remember what they're called, but like the pathways that you can mm-hmm. save yeah. in Google Earth, and you can save those for, like you said, like a history tour or a literature yeah. tour or things like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Very popular.
I'm noticing in the sixth... Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say a couple other sites that we want to include in the show notes are PurposeGames.com, where you can create and play your own online games, and then Novell Games, where they include embed code so that you can embed Flash games in your own website. We had fun with that at our school. I allowed the kids to go out and try, and I think they have like 200 plus games that you can embed in your own website, and they each got to pick their own games that were their favorites. So they built a game website for themselves by, you know, and they had some ownership over that by picking their favorite games from the list.
Very good. So check the website out for a much longer list than what we've briefly covered here, but there's all kinds of possibilities and maybe just some good advice on picking the appropriate games for the particular age group. Very interesting concept. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to our ministry resources section. We have a couple things that we stumbled on over the course of the week that we'd like to share. One I found, and I don't remember how it came to me, but a site called babblewith.me. And babblewith.me is essentially a free chat tool, but it's real-time translation enabled. So you pick your language, the person you're chatting with picks their language, and it essentially translates between the two of you. Google has some similar tools, but this is kind of a slick interface. You create the chat, then you do an invitation via email. The person clicks on the link, they select their language, and away you go. I think there's some ancillary tools here and probably some paid for services that you could add on here, but right out of the box it's free and works really well. I can envision some uses in certainly missionary settings or foreign mission fields, or if you're trying to do any kind of cross-cultural work, this might be a tool that could be used to at least enable ministry. I'd like to hear some stories about how people use these kinds of tools, but this is one that I just stumbled on. I thought it was well done and probably worth sharing.
Also wanted to mention in this segment that Concordia Publishing House has recently released the Lutheran Study Bible, and they're kind of going Web 2.0, at least with their promotion mm-hmm. of the Study Bible. They have a whole video series, which is really well done, where they're kind of going over the different components of the Bible and that kind of thing. They've actually podcast and interviewed the publishers and people like that. And they even have a Twitter account, Lutheran Bible, on Twitter mm-hmm. that you can follow and get updates from them about the Lutheran Study Bible project. So check out Lutheran Study Bible.
So this would be the next generation of the Concordia Self-Study Bible. Is that the concept?
I believe so, with notes specifically from a Lutheran perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. All right, let's move on to our picks of the week. Gail is our semi-regular guest. Why don't you lead off?
Okay, well, my pick has nothing to do with games, but it just so happened it seemed kind of timely because this is Teacher Conference Week. Besides the big conference, we have our Parent Teacher Conference Week this week also, and we use a website called pickatime.com, and what this does for us is it schedules our all of our conferences online. So we put it on our website and parents go there and they can sign up for times with various teachers, and then the teachers are able to print out their schedules themselves from the online. If they don't have access to the web, of course, then they phone the office and the secretary mm-hmm. puts it online for them. So we get make sure we get everybody. And it's just such an advantage for the secretary not having to spend all her time trying to finagle that big, long, complicated schedule for the 3 days that we do this. And then also, the teachers can just look online. You can print out a schedule if you want, or you can just look online and see when your visits are. So it's pretty cool. There is a cost involved. We pay $50 in order to do this through this company, but we feel that it's well worth it. And I thought it bears mentioning because it saves a lot of time and hassle for a teacher conference time.
Is that $50 a year? Yeah.
$50 actually an event.
An event. So, okay.
Yeah. So if you have if you do teachers' conferences twice a year, it'd be $100 mm-hmm. a year.
Okay, right. Probably well worth it for certain situations.
That's very well worth it for us. It's very confusing the way we do it.
Okay, mm-hmm. Very good. Pickatime.com. Sally?
My pick is one with the kids in mind, although I had a really good time exploring this site. It's called the Mega Penny Project, and it's a visualization site. It says that visualizing huge numbers can be really difficult. So when you start talking about millions and billions of things, hard to have an idea of how that works. But what they did was they took a penny and they showed stacks of pennies. So you could see how things stacked up. Starting with one, they go all the way up to, let's see, a trillion. Mm-hmm. And how many pennies it would take to equal to the Empire State Building, and what one quintillion pennies looks like, and on and on. And there's even a special bonus section where you can see what it looks like to see how cows stack up as well.
So how what? Really cows?
Cows, yeah. Okay. they have a mega moo site.
Mega cow?
As well,
mega so. Moo. Okay.
But check it out, because they kind of put it in perspective. They show you a football field eventually. And then they start, relating it to skyscrapers and things like that as they begin stacking up these pennies. It really does give you a good visual about what some of these larger numbers would look like.
Okay.
You know, there's a site out there that does that with dollar bills, too. I'm mm-hmm. just seeing if
okay.
I can find that.
Cool.
And it's like, how much is a million or mm-hmm. a trillion?
Interesting. All right, my pick is a website that I've used for probably a year and a half now, but just I don't know if I've ever talked about it on the show. It's called Mint, mint.com. It's been in the news recently. Essentially, it's an online finance management tool. Many of us are familiar with Quicken or Microsoft Money, those things that you typically manage your checkbook with on your computer, your PC or your Mac. This happens to be all online. People get a little bit queasy about sharing that information to an online service like Mint, although from what I've read and from what I understand, they use the same encryption technology that a lot of our banks do and have the same information the banks do about us anyway. What it does is it aggregates everything about your financial life onto a website. And obviously it's password protected and so on and so forth. But you give it your username and passwords for your online accounts, whether it be a credit card or a savings account or your checking account, your investment accounts. And then it brings it all together. And you can, in one view, kind of see your net worth, see how you're doing. You can create very sophisticated budgets based on analytical data that you could extract from your spending habits, whether they be, you know, via your checking account or debit card or credit card, whatever it is. You can set alerts that will notify you when large expenditures are made or you're over your certain limits. If you want to say, tell me when I've reached so much on a particular credit card or my balance reaches this level on my checking account and so on and so forth, or you've exceeded a budget item, you could be alerted to that via email or text messaging. There's an iPhone app, and one thing that this is kind of front of mind for me, that kind of brought it into front of mind, is that I'm teaching at my congregation a Heart and Focus class, which is our Synod Stewardship Program. And this strikes me as a great stewardship tool, something that would kind of keep your finances in front of you. You can set personal goals. You kind of keep an eye on what's going on as opposed to letting your finances happen to you. You can have exercise a little bit more control over that and ultimately be a better steward of God's resources. So totally free. Intuit, I believe, just bought them. So I'm hoping that there will be more integration with the ability to pay bills and so forth, set up recurring payments, those kinds of things. You can't do anything like that on Mint. It's more just a reporting tool. At this point, you can kind of see what's happening within your accounts. But I think with Intuit's purchase of Mint, they're probably going to provide some more online bill pay, those kinds of things. So mint.com.
Well, Martin, you're the brave one. I'm glad to hear that you're using that service, and just kind of scary thing to jump off and give them all of your account information.
Yep. My identity is still intact. So strong passwords obviously are necessary, and they have not had any issues. They've been around for a couple years now, and I think they're getting more and more acceptance.
Seems like a hugely valuable service.
It is. So. It's awesome.
Very good.
All right. Sally, you want to talk about some online ministry resources?
Yeah, actually, we are introducing this week a new page on our Wells Tech website. We'll have a link to it in the show notes, but the link will always be available on the sidebar under additional resources. And it's actually a compilation page of all those ministry resources that we're mentioning in each weekly show. We do this with our Picks of the Week as well, so if you haven't visited our Picks of the Week page, you might want to check that out. Mm-hmm. But what we found is that it's become a really valuable listing of resources, and we kind of try to categorize them. So hopefully this ministry resources page is going to develop over time into a real tool chest of of ideas and links and things that call workers and those working in ministry in whatever capacity can make use of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for instance, today we introduced the babblewith.me site, so that would be listed there. Sally, you do a great job at categorizing these. If our listeners have not been to the Picks of the Week page, it's not just a raw listing by week, so it's not just an endless list. We do some thinking as far as what kind of tool is it? So is it a utility? Is it educational? Is it whatever? And I go back there all the time thinking, boy, I know we talked about this, or I know Sally brought this up. This would be perfect in this situation. Great resource. So
yes, I thank you for that too, Sally. I also use it a lot.
Yeah. So we're going to do the same with these ministry resources, and hopefully it will be an equally valuable tool. Feedback time. Who's talking to us?
Yeah, we had several tweets from our buddy Jason Schmidt. He's our tweeting teacher out in Omaha, Nebraska at Gethsemane Lutheran School. And he shared with us, first of all, a page from Apple called 15 Tools to Help You Go Paperless. And it's specifically go paperless in the classroom. So you want to check that out. Next up, he read a blog post about a website called Schoolology, which is an online course management system. It can serve a lot of different functions. The blog post talks about you can use it to create assignments, post assignments, collect assignments, converse with students, track attendance, and maintain a grade book. And right now they're offering to teachers an individual membership in the site for free. And they say that you'll always have access to the premium features at no cost. So if there's teachers out there that are looking for a place to do some classroom management online, you might want to check out Schoolology.
Very good.
And the third link that Jason tweeted to us was Chartle.net. He had asked a question a while back on Twitter about an online charting tool, kind of a Web 2.0 tool for creating charts. And I responded with a couple I was aware of, but they were more for drawing, mm-hmm. like for organizational charts or that kind of thing. He was actually looking for something that's more like the charting.
Pie charts or bar charts, that kind
Excel.
Of stuff. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And this Chartle.net is the one that is recommended for interactive charts online. So if you need a tool like that, you might want to check out Jason's link to Chartle.net.
Very
and we
good.
Thank Jason for all those great links.
Yep.
And the last feedback that we wanted to share was from Pastor Emil Burgess. He's at Trinity in Caledonia, Wisconsin, and he is a Getting Things Done fan, Martin.
Yay.
So somebody after your heart there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he wrote to us to let us know that he's been looking at our Wells Tech resources for GTD. We actually did a show on that this summer in our bonus Wells Tech Goodness series where mm-hmm. We kind of walk through having an empty inbox, which is one of the main concepts with GTD. And he is using it and using it successfully. It's really helping him to stay organized. So he just wanted to tell us thanks and to keep up the good work.
Yep.
It's encouraging to hear.
And he threw in there, he just switched to the Mac. So, all right. Next week, we've got, well, as Gail mentioned, and I'll be doing some work here too for the State Teachers Conference. One of the classes I'm presenting on Thursday is on digital Bible study, and I'm finding all kinds of great resources I'm going to share with the folks that are going to attend that workshop, but we're going to share a little bit of that in our next class. Next podcast. You got me classroom technology focused. We're going to talk a little bit about digital Bible study, what the tools are, what we can do online and offline, and there's just been a great trend in the industry now where the religious side of technology is just beginning to explode, and we're seeing more and more tools out there, Bible study type tools that are either online or DVD based that we can talk about. So I'm looking forward to that. And hopefully we can grab some quick interviews with teachers that have attended that conference and their experiences with digital Bible study tools as well, a few sound bites as it were. So that should be about it for the show. Gail, thank you so much for joining us once again. We really do enjoy the time that you spend with us.
Well, thank you. It was nice for me to be here.
And Sally, as always, great work. And we will talk to everybody next week. Let's close the show with the music of Stephen Bautista, his song Abandoned from an album by the same name. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
afraid to leave this familiar place that I have come to know, and push out through the boundaries of my comfort zone and venture down a road I've never traveled. I must have away.